It is Friday on the Brother Trucker Book Club podcast, and that means Tales from the Road. I am your host, Graham Bradley. As promised, the Big Bad Canadia special is today. Not really a special, it's just another Tales from the Road. So Canada, there is a lot of commerce going into the country, a little bit coming out of it, and any trucking carrier, motor carrier that can get a piece of that action will be able to generate more income for themselves and for the drivers. So they're always looking for drivers that can get into Canada, which is a bit of a tricky proposition considering the kind of people that largely enter commercial trucking. Commercial trucking laws in Canada are a little bit more strict than they are in the United States. Some carriers can bring you on in the U.S. if you've got a DUI on your record within a certain amount of time, but having a CDL and a DUI in Canada, as it was explained to me, is a felony. There's some sort of big legal roadblock to it, not pun intended, but you can't be a CDL holder with a DUI on your record. I'm not sure what the statute of limitations on it is. All I know is that if you're a commercial driver and you don't have any DUIs or, you know, big moving vehicle infractions on your record, the carriers are very excited to have you, and they'll do whatever they can to get you running loads into and out of Canada. You can't run loads point to point in Canada. That is to say that I wouldn't be able to take a dispatch from somewhere in Canada and drop it off somewhere in Canada the way that I would in the United States. As a United States resident, it was only legal for me to run loads into or out of the country. Most of what those loads ended up being were cardboard, recycled cardboard. As for what they were going in, that depended on which province I was entering. To give you an idea of my very first run, actually, no, let's take it a few steps back. That summer when I was doing my solo run, I was still on the abbreviated pay scale. I was getting a few less cents per mile than I would once the full pay scale kicked in. But that July of 2013, they must have noticed, based on my hire record, that I didn't have any traffic infractions and didn't have any DUIs, any of that stuff. They said, hey, we need you to run loads into Canada. There are border bonuses every time you do it. Depending on which crossing that you go into and come out of, it could be anywhere from $25 to $50 every time you cross the border. So I said, yeah, give me a piece of that action. So they sent me to the post office to get my passport renewed. It was just expiring that month. I had first gotten it in 2003 so that I could leave the country for my church mission. And lo and behold, they only are good for 10 years. So the company paid the $185 fee to have it renewed for me. Pardon me, I'm still dealing with allergies. And then got me on my first load going up into British Columbia. I had to pick up a load from an IKEA distribution center in Central California. And now I'm trying to remember, I want to say this was on the 5. The two big north-south highways in Canada that I ran for trucking were on the I-5 and then the 99, which was a California state highway. But I'm pretty sure this one was on the 5, and they had this massive IKEA distribution center that would bring in stuff, you know, made in China, made overseas, bring them in on these huge shipping containers off of shipping boats, and then intermodal transport would bring them from the ports and the docks into the shipping facility, the distribution center for IKEA, and then they'd be broken down into trailer loads for trucks to move to the various IKEA facilities on the West Coast. I hate IKEA. I hate it so much. I'd been to it beforehand. Yes, I understand that they sell cheap balsa wood furniture that is inexpensive and at least looks good as long as you don't expect it to do anything. And if you're a college student or you're recently divorced or something, it's the ideal place to go for furniture that doesn't look like you bought it at Walmart. But holy crap, I hate hauling loads for IKEA. I hate their methodology, and that is why I hate them just in general. No offense. Actually, maybe offense. I don't know. The meatballs are probably good. The problem with IKEA loads is that they were almost always at maximum weight. My total GCWR, gross combined weight rating, was 80,000 pounds. That was the absolute heaviest that I could be, including whatever I had eaten for lunch and whatever fuel I had in the tanks on the trucks. So with the weight of the tractor and the trailer, my dry weight was right around 33,500 to 34,000 pounds. So the absolute peak amount of weight that they could put in was 23 tons or 46,000 pounds to get me up to 80,000. And these IKEA loads were usually between 44 and 45,000. And that, coupled with the fact that I would then take one of these huge, huge heavy loads and I'd have to run the I-5 north up the California coast. If I was taking the 5 north out of California, that would invariably run me up Mount Shasta, which was half a day's climb at about 45 to 50 miles an hour tops, probably slower depending on traffic or just how heavy I was and how well I managed my climbing and my descending. So that was what I was up against with those. And then I'd end up climbing a mountain or two again in Oregon, and then I'd just get stuck in traffic on the 5 in Washington. But I had to take that route all the way up and then shut down at the Castle Cargo Terminal in Seattle, because there was no point in trying to make the crossing at Blaine, Washington, north of Seattle, if it was still daylight. If the sun was up, I could expect to be delayed at the border crossing there for at least 2 hours. I very rarely did I make it across that border crossing faster than that. The other advantage to that, though, is once you've got your paperwork all lined up, you had to file international brokerage for the specific load you were carrying, and then there was a time delay on when they got that processed and when they sent the approval back to you, so that by the time you went to the border, you could just hand them the paperwork. They already knew what you had, how much it was, and where it was going. Everything was on the level. You had your ducks in a row, and then you could just cross the border once you got to the window. The another reason why you would wait at the Seattle terminal before crossing at Blaine was IKEA will only receive you, if you're a trucker, between 1 and 5 in the morning. So for traffic and for hours of reception and having to manage that with my hours of service regulations, I would wake up at around midnight, get all fired up, drive an hour and a half north out of Seattle up to Blaine, cross when there was very little traffic, and then enter the dark, silent world of British Columbia. And usually it was the IKEA in a place called Coquitlam, where I would back into one of the very tight docks that they had, and if they already had other trucks there ahead of me, I'd have to wait, and then they'd send an IKEA worker out to pound on my door at 2 in the morning, have me back up again, and then wait for several hours till they offloaded me. My sleep hours would be all messed up, my hours of service would be all messed up, and yet I'd still have dispatch calling me at 10 in the morning, saying, "Hey, you ready to go yet?" No, dingus, you know I'm not ready to go yet. You can see right there on your computer, but that's why you're calling me on my phone instead of putting it over the system. That's an entirely separate story. I will have many dispatch stories for you in a future episode. But then I'd get unloaded in IKEA, and then I would have to go to probably a commercial recycling facility to get a load that would take me out of the country. And they would just load me up with bales of rectangular loads of cardboard, which then would go back into Washington, usually to a recycling facility in Longview, and that would get me out of the country. And that would get me, if I was at Blaine, it was only a total of $75. So not only was it the worst crossing and it was the most crowded and you dealt with the most sexually repressed Border Patrol agents you've ever dealt with in your life, like these are guys that graduated out of the DMV, and that's how much they're going to take their frustration out on you. Not only was Blaine the worst crossing, but you also got paid less to do it, which really just annoyed the heck out of me. So if I could avoid it, I would prefer to take loads into Alberta, a few hundred miles west, or excuse me, east. A few hundred miles west to put you out in the water. Which, fortunately, if I was leaving straight out of my hometown of Henderson, I more often got to take loads up into Alberta, and I ran this particular route so many times that I had the stops down to a science. So I would go to North Las Vegas, I'd pick up my truck, get all checked in, this is after, you know, some home time, drive back to Henderson to where they had an ocean spray facility, and they would load me up with many thousands of pounds of delicious, fruity, sugary-laced beverages. And once they got me loaded, I'd hook up, I'd file all my documentation over the system, and it would take me about 8 hours to run from Henderson, Nevada to Salt Lake City, Utah, where Castle Cargo had a terminal, shut down for the night, wait my 10 hours, wake up in the morning, and then again keep going north up the 15, and I could make it as far as Sweetgrass, Montana. And there was a Flying J, or maybe it was a Pilot, same company, but you know, they'll be named one or the other. I'm pretty sure this was a Flying J Travel Center. I could park in there, and right next door was a nice barbecued rib restaurant, which I didn't always eat at because, you know, 15, 20 bucks a dinner is pretty expensive when you're on the road all the time. But I found if I pulled headfirst into one of the parking spots there and got my tractor closer to the building, I could access their Wi-Fi for the night. And not only did that save me data, I was on a limited data plan at the time. I was able to file my brokerage documents there, and then I could use their Wi-Fi for the night to watch some Hulu or whatever. And then get going first thing in the morning. And from Sweetgrass to the border, it was maybe an hour, hour and a half. And I'd stop there at the border north of Sweetgrass, Montana, on the open plains where the 54th parallel crosses between Montana and Alberta. And then I'd run straight north from there to Calgary, drop off all my Ocean Spray products, again, pick up a load of recyclable cardboard, and by the time I got all my ducks in a row and squared away there, I could stop at a little town called Nanton, 45 miles south of Calgary. Now, there was a big old Pilot truck stop in Calgary, but you had to pay to use their Wi-Fi at the time. And you're always looking for cheap stuff and free stuff on the road, and free Wi-Fi is free Wi-Fi. So Nanton had a Flying J with a little restaurant next door that intentionally broadcasted Wi-Fi to the truckers there, you know, as part of their commerce. When I say small town, I mean the chief attraction there was an old Canadian Air Force museum and a candy museum. This place is a super small town, little brick buildings, little single store, you know, almost Americana, but I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of is of that metric Americana or Canadiana. I don't know what it is, but adorable little town. I loved it. I love staying there. And I would intentionally schedule my stops so that, you know, between the time and everything, it wasn't a massive amount of distance to go from Sweetgrass into Calgary and back to Nanton, but between getting unloaded and getting reloaded, that's usually what it would come out to be. The other route that I would end up taking, depending on what I was hauling, is would run me up the west side of Idaho, up the US 95. And there was a truck stop in a little town called Bonner's Ferry, where I could stay for the night. Excuse me. And from there, it was, I want to say, half an hour to the border. Beautiful country up there, mountainous, woodland, you know, old Kootenai tribe area. And the border crossing was just this tiny little shack in the middle of a highway in the mountains where it was dead quiet. I mean, flip, the Hunger Games could have been going on up in there. And you'd run up Bonner's Ferry, just beautiful, beautiful country. Can't stress how gorgeous it was, especially once it started snowing in the winter. It, you know, just absolute winter wonderland. And ran up that way, and then I'd move east for a little while, and I'd pick up the same Canadian highway. I want to say it was the Alberta 2 or the Alberta 3. I can never remember which, because the numbering system for the Canadian highways doesn't go along the same method as the numbering system for the U.S. highways. In case you don't know, odd-numbered interstates run north-south, and even-numbered interstates run east-west in the U.S., but it doesn't follow the same rule in Canada, so I can never remember which one it was. But if I crossed at Sweetgrass or at Bonner's Ferry, I would usually get $100 or $110 or so. There was a fee to enter the United States, but not to leave it, so they'd compensate me for that fee as well. But between the long miles and the frequency of the loads and the bonus for the border crossing, I was taking home about $900 a week, which was a big improvement of over what I was making just on my training run and on my solo run. So I did end up looking forward to the Canada runs, and I will fully cop to, even as being a patriotic American, that I love stopping at Tony Horton's and getting a hot chocolate and whatever donuts they had there, because, you know, they had some good chow. So plenty of good memories listening to good books and just making that extra cheddar running up into Canada. The only tricky part was that they tend to have lower overpasses and lower bridges. And fortunately, my digital GPS was able to convert local speed limits into miles and local overheads into feet instead of meters. Just because, you know, I got good at doing that, but doing it initially and doing it on the fly was always a little bit slower than doing it here stateside. So I had to make sure that I wasn't going to try to drive over or drive under something that was going to hit my trailer. So little differences like that. It was better to end up in Alberta than it was to end up in the greater Vancouver area. And the farthest north that I ever went was Edmonton. I went there one time, but that's less of a Canada story and more of a I hate my dispatcher story. So we'll save that for the I hate my dispatcher episode slightly later down the road. So that's it for this week. Thank you all for listening. I hope you're enjoying the Tales from the Road. And until then, till the next time, drive safe. See you out there.